Hi, my name is Steve Smith, and I'm the president of Guarding Defense, where we do active shooter training for schools, businesses, and law enforcement. Welcome to the Ultimate School Safety Telesummit, how to protect your school in emergencies and violent attacks. We have a great lineup of school safety experts, mental health professionals, and safety product developers who have given us their time and knowledge to be with us this week. Our goal this week at the Ultimate School Safety Telesummit is to tap into all school safety resources and help our listeners, school administrators, school teachers, and parents identify, plan, and prepare for safety concerns on school grounds before they occur. Our subject matter experts will provide insight to the most current procedures and considerations a school should take. Today, we are very fortunate to have Mr. Sean Spellese. Sean, welcome to the Telesummit.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
Sean Spellese is the founder and CEO of New Dawn Security. Sean started his career as a security specialist and executive protection agent in the entertainment world. Starting a family required less travel and more stability, so he continued to train law enforcement agents in executive protection while using his degree to enter the world of education. During a 10-year career as a teacher and school principal, Sean began putting the pieces together on what was to become the 26 Safe School Standards and the Excellence in Safe School Operations Certification. Having something valuable and needed for schools throughout the United States, Sean retired from education and formed New Dawn Security in 2010. The standards-based security management and certification process developed for schools has proved valuable for numerous additional organizations. Currently, New Dawn Security is serving colleges, universities, K-12 schools, churches, casinos, banks, and state and federal government institutions and organizations throughout the United States. New Dawn specialists that came from law enforcement, mental health, specialized security, cyberspace, safety, and military fields of operation. New Dawn Security is based in Hood River, Oregon, with satellite offices in Seattle and Tacoma, Washington. Sean, you have a great set of programs set up at New Dawn Security. Although you have a wide range of knowledge to bring to this telesummit, today we have you here to speak specifically about preventable measures that can be taken in our schools to make them safer. Are you ready to get started?
Absolutely.
Again, Sean, thank you for your service, your dedication for our children and our schools and our military. Also, obviously, you're going to be here speaking about these safety, preventable measures. But also, we're going to kind of tap into another program that you have developed, and that's the program for sexual misconduct. I just wanted to let our audience know that. That you also are an expert in that, and we'll be definitely diving into that question as well.
Great.
So the first question, knowing that school safety has always been a concern for school administrators, what did you notice throughout the day-to-day operations that made it become such a primary concern, and how did you go about limiting these incidents and risks?
Well, back when I was a principal, I guess my last year was 2006, some of the concerns that are there, the risk, the high risk today, were the same then. Our top three really were intruders on campus. Social media had just started to kind of, forgive the expression, but rear its ugly head. Chat rooms were a really big deal. And the last and one that really did a lot of damage was the advent of the cell phone cameras and the video cameras on the cell phones. And really what we did, because we were just hammered really with all of these type of things at one period of time, they all kind of developed probably within an 18-month time frame. We sat down and developed protocols to be able to make sure that we were implementing over a period of time. Specifically, we didn't educate parents, teachers, students, and community members just once. We did it over four different times throughout the school year. For the social media and chat rooms, we worked directly with law enforcement, actually created fake profiles is the wrong term, but profiles that allowed law enforcement and us to monitor some of the more popular areas or popular media outlets, social media outlets, so that we could predict and kind of see something that may be developing. And then we did a lot of vulnerability tests to help with our intruder on campus stuff. It was one of the things we still do today for New Dawn Security. Is it's one thing to lock your doors to make sure everything's in place and tell everybody to do it, but having somebody, again, principal knows we're coming, but see how far somebody can get into campus without somebody addressing them or asking them about a visitor's badge or take him to the office. All of those type of things could, and the real key to this was they could be objectively measured so that we could come back at the end of the year or the end of 6 months and say, okay, did we do our 4 training sessions? Did we, with our profiles set up, were we able to gather enough social media information? And how did we do on our vulnerability test, you know, by number? Where was it the first time we did it, it was 20 minutes, second time 10, you know, did we make progress with that? So those were the things that we began doing as a way to effectively mitigate that risk.
And what was your outcome?
The outcome was we were literally shown and being able to prove, not just to ourselves, but more really and more important to the parents and the school board, that the steps we were taking were effective, that we were able to, we didn't have intruders on campus. Again, thankfully, that was pre-Sandy Hook, post-Columbine, but it was still a real concern. And, you know, just having the UPS guy walk in the back door and go into classrooms or go into the gym without anybody knowing, although, again, UPS doesn't represent a risk, but it's still that knowing who's on campus, knowing when they're on campus, those type of things we could literally measure and say we had less than 3 incidents where there was an intruder on campus that nobody knew about, that nobody knew about. We were able to get it down to 0 within 6 months. We educated our parents. We got 4 different sessions where we were educating parents, and the amount of population grew exponentially each time that we were doing it, so that we had a great amount of participation. One of the sub keys to that is provide food. That was always a big one. Make sure we provide food. But the other idea was that we were able to give them really what was so key was not only raising the awareness, but also giving them the idea of acceptance that, and let me be more specific. It's one thing to say, here are all the social media risks that kids face. It's another thing to say, 2 weeks ago, a 13-year-old cheerleader was approached by an individual that had been social media, that had been chatting with her and it turned out to be a 37-year-old, you know, man from Tennessee, and she was 15 seconds from getting into a car. You know, being able to make it real, and then, you know, the part of that's the awareness, but it's also the acceptance for parents to know and for staff, and especially even for principals, is the idea of, yes, this could happen here. Yes, this type of thing is going on. And that allowed us to be much more effective in the work that we were doing.
You know, listening to you and kind of summarizing, you know, we were just kind of having a previous conversation before we went live here, and, you know, you not only recognized not one problem, but, you know, 4 different problems, you know, that kind of arose just because of generational, you know, advances with technology and so forth, and what also has transpired in our country, and that's, you know, a higher risk of intruders coming on campus, and it's not just a risk, you know, that school ministers think about, but also parents. And, you know, you really jumped ahead of the curve and really drew up a plan and were proactive and really started the prevention side. And we were just talking about that. You know, there's a lot of people out there, not just in schools, but in businesses and so forth, that recognize, hey, there's problems, but you know what? Maybe we can put it aside for now, you know, and then what happens? You have a tragedy happen. And now you're trying to play catch up so it doesn't happen again. You know, you identified certain problems and you were very proactive. You've got the right resources, you know, law enforcement, vulnerability tests, you spoke with parents, and you had that open dialogue, and you, you know, and it ultimately became effective, which is how I'm kind of taking your words right here. So, you know, really true pioneer in your community. And, I think that's great. And, you know, I hope our audience really takes, you know, that message that you just had, you know, you just put out there, because it's, just like you said, very effective.
Well, and thanks, Steve. It, honestly, it, you know, I guess I'm crediting my education background with that. It's the same way kids learn. You know, kids don't learn something the first time you tell them. I can promise you my 12-year-old son doesn't even come close to that. But the idea of doing it over a period of time, either repeating the same message or bringing up new things to talk with, that's, I mean, it's literally the brain-based research of how we learn, and it can't just happen one, you know, session before school starts. It's got to happen throughout the year for, again, the idea of, it's one thing to introduce safety protocols. It's a whole nother thing to have safety and security protocols embedded on campus, and the fact that we can measure it and the fact that we can make sure they're effective is what we know to be able to work and to be able to prove to others that this is what we're doing. Look at our statistics. Look at what we've done. This hasn't happened here. You can't, and I'll probably say this a couple times, there's no such thing as 100% safe on a school campus, but there is such a thing as 100% safe as possible.
Right. Yeah, and you know what? Every day that goes by that a tragedy doesn't occur, you got to give yourself a pat on the back and know that, hey, you know, maybe we stopped something today, just based upon the measures you've taken. And every year, you know, like you said, you reinvest and you get better. So, you know, kudos to you for that.
Well, thank you. It's good. It's been a privilege.
Absolutely. So how important is it for schools to have then written policies and procedures for an active threat on campus? So if a school currently does not have a school safety plan for an active threat, what resources do you find are available to school administrators to assist in drafting that plan?
Well, there's hundreds, and you know as well as I do, you Google lockdown protocols for schools and you'll get hundreds if not thousands of hits or hundreds of thousands of hits. What really is key is that your plan is specific to your culture, and that plan has to make use of judgment. Meaning, I can't list out, and quite honestly, in 2005, 2004, we would say, okay, you know, after Columbine, maybe, and after things that kind of, they're pre-Sandy Hook, it was like, okay, here's our lockdown plan, and we're going to go through this two or three times a year. And the teachers would say, okay, you know, give me something to do, and I'll do it. And that's, teachers are great that way. You know, here, write it down, I'll do it. The problem is, in any kind of lockdown plan, as you know, there's going to be mitigating factors that you can't plan for. So there has to be what we call that, again, that judgment factor, that you can tell teachers to shut the blinds, turn off the lights, spread the kids out, don't lump them all in one area, make sure they're quiet, take cell phones. You can do all of those things, and I've got bunches on my website. Anybody's free to take as many as you want, please feel free. But what really is important in that is what we've used and other schools have used is the run, hide, fight, avoid, deny, defend, the Alice, all of those type of things that give teachers additional ways to fall, additional judgment factors to fall back on. You know, to be able to say, look, it says to close my blinds, but there's a shooter right there in the window. I'm not going to be able to do that. Now what? You know, again, that's a little obvious and a little crass, but that's kind of the idea of that lockdown plan has to have the ability for teachers to use their judgment. And it really has to be drilled enough to be able to be secondhand. And I want to make this really clear. We work with a lot of schools and they've asked, well, we don't want to doing lockdown drills every month, scare our kids, do all this stuff. And again, I don't know the specific culture,
But what I would tell them is 98% of a lockdown drill depend upon adults, faculty, and staff following directions and using their judgment. Drill it without the kids if you have a cultural issue or if you've had a recent issue nearby or something to that effect. Drill it without the kids. Make sure you've got it right, your technology's working, and then utilize it with the kids a couple times a year, three times a year, whatever it is that best fits, but make sure that that's being drilled on a regular basis. And here's the real kind of measurement of whether or not your plan is effective is we always tell the schools, invite law enforcement. Invite them to come over. If you can't lock down your entire campus in less than 20, 30 seconds, you've got a problem. There's an issue there. Right. If people are opening doors or can't hear intercoms, those are all things. But those, again, can all be measured, and we can always look for the improvement.
No, I think that's a phenomenal answer. And, you know, one of the things that we train when we go to schools is just that, you know, you can have all the written policies you want, but for this type of crisis, it's a little different. Because you're going to have to react based on the situation that you are independently in. And those independent decision-making skills, you know, based on your personal plan for your room and those kids is what's going to be key. You can't rely on someone else to tell you what to do. And a lot of times, schools don't have the luxury in a real incident where communications coming over the TA, right? So they might just hear auditory sounds of gunfire, and they're going to have to react independently in their room. So I think that is awesome answer that you put out there, and hopefully our audience is listening that, you know, they have to use their own judgment and, you know, and identify what the threat is and how to respond.
Absolutely. And I'll add one little caveat, Steve, if I can. One of the things Absolutely. That we're really making sure everybody knows is this little one, is that we disregard the fire alarm while we're in lockdown unless we see or smell smoke. Just adding that little one in there, you know, again, allows teachers to kind of take away some of those what ifs. You know, there's been a little bit, a tiny history, and I think there's maybe been less than three, maybe four incidents where somebody's hit a fire alarm to get kids out in the open to make them targets. But in that same reality, that helps mitigate some of that risk as well.
Yeah, I agree, because, you know, definitely because the conditioned response is always to evacuate. And, yeah, to break that conditional response, you know, just by having that conversation when you're already in that lockdown, I think is absolutely right on point. And I think one of those incidents that you referred to, I think one was Jonesboro, Arkansas, when they lured them out. So, that's a great point. So I know that you have developed a specific program, so I want to kind of talk about that. You mentioned from a previous conversation that you have identified a total of 164 daily risks at schools. You have then developed a measuring system to how well a school is prepared to deal with those risks. Could you please explain this program and how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. It's what we've kind of dubbed the Excellence in Safe School Certification. And really what it is it's, you know as well as I do, and your listeners will too, whether it's security at the airport or at Microsoft or at the White House or at my son's elementary school, achieving security is the same idea, or obtained in the same way. It's you identify the risks that you face, you develop a plan to mitigate those risks, and then you objectively measure whether or not your plan's effective. And if it's not, you go back and tinker until you've got all those things in place. So that was kind of that knowledge of security I had before I went into education. And so we started looking at, okay, what are we prepared for? What are we not prepared for? And we defined risks specifically for this type of measurement as anything that can negatively impact the school day-to-day operation. So, again, when somebody hears 164, oh, my goodness, that's anything from a bus breaking down or a teacher that has a seizure in a classroom or, you know, a student, you know, breaking a nose on the playground. All of those things are risks that schools face on a daily basis. So what we did was we took the 26 safe school standards, and to make those make sense, back in 1980, President Reagan mandated to the Department of Juvenile Justice and to the Department of Ed to have safe school standards. They never really went anywhere. They never really even kind of got developed. But at one point, there was 14. When I started doing this, I looked for something that said, okay, how do I prove my school is safe? We found those standards. We added 12 more to make it more akin to what the kids face today. Then we took all 164 risks and put them into a subsequent standard. So like a bus breaking down goes under, or bus, well, let me make it easier. A student has a allergic reaction and has to call 911 on a school bus. So that goes under emergency operations. An intruder on campus goes into active, or an intruder firing a weapon on campus goes under active shooter. A student sexually abusing another student goes under sexual misconduct. So we've got those standards in place. They all 164 go into one standard. Some go into multiple, but now we've covered all of our risks with the standards. And then we have five objective measurements to be able to tell us whether or not the school is as safe as actually possible. And one of those standards is, for all the 26, is there a policy for this? Is there something in writing that tells us how to do our emergency operations? The second one is there a procedure assigned to it that everybody that's supposed to know knows? Is that if they have, so if they have, they can get as many as 5 points per standard. The first point is there a policy? Second point, is there a procedure? Third point is that policy and procedure regularly measured? Are we looking at how many accidents have we had? How many trip and falls? How many, you know, sexual misconduct? Are we measuring it to make sure that we have, that it's effective? And based on the policy, based on the procedure, is there also a plan in place? Is there something that I can put my teeth to say, this is exactly what we're doing to mitigate this? If I've got those four, I get 4 points. And then last but not least, the fifth point is, am I doing something proactive in this specific standard? And an example for that is one of the more horrific things that have happened over the past couple of years is there were students that were putting Wi-Fi based cameras, video cameras, into the exhaust fan grates of girls' locker rooms and boys' locker rooms. They were downloading the footage via the school's Wi-Fi network and selling it online to what was turned out to be a Russian company's upskirt.com website that were paying $500 for 5 minutes of video. And wow. A proactive move, yeah, I mean, it was horrific, but a proactive move in there is that once every week, our custodian goes through, or a custodian goes through the bathroom, shines a flashlight into the grates to make sure there's not a reflection back at him, make sure there's not a camera there. And again, doesn't take but 30 seconds, and that's a proactive action there. So that's a small example, but that, are we doing something proactive in this? And so for all of those standards, there's, again, 26 multiplied by 5 gives you 130 as a perfect score. And I'll give you this information, and I'll tell you just from my own school. I went through this. I developed it. I got it all in place. And then I had somebody else come in and measure it because, it's too hard to be objective with your own school. I had one of my security friends come in and monitor it. And I ended up with a 94, and that really wasn't, I thought I'd be a lot higher. I wasn't. Since I began doing it, and again, I had the benefit of a security background. I was an expert going in. We've gone into over 350 public and private K-12 schools, and the highest score that was recorded was a 78.
Wow.
And again, it's not meant to, and I kept telling, it was so hard to convince the administrators of this. This isn't saying you're horrible. This isn't saying you're not safe. This is saying, if we have to look at this objectively, it's saying we can do a lot more to be as safe as possible. Now, what's the plan that we're going to be able to develop that makes it work within our culture. Because if we put things out there that just are, you know, the example of, we can make sure that nobody with a gun ever gets into a school campus. We'd have metal detectors. We'd have 10-foot-high barbed wire fence. We'd have bomb-sniffing dogs. We don't want our kids in a school like that. So how does it best fit into the culture that makes us as safe as possible? And what we've really been fortunate to be able to say and to be able to watch more really than say is the schools that we've been working with, they show market improvement. They're up to, we've got schools up to 118, 120. Are they going to get to 130? I hope so, but it takes a while. It doesn't happen overnight when you change the culture from what are we doing instead of what are we going to do to respond to this, changing the culture to what are we going to do to prevent and respond if it happens.
That's a phenomenal system. It sounds like you got going on. Very effective, very manageable and organized. Unfortunately, we're short on time, but I think you answered the next question, which was going to be how do schools prioritize? And we only have a few minutes left, but that if they score low in multiple areas, and I think you just hit it. And I think it's really important that if they're wondering, I got all these, I'm scoring low in multiple categories, but I guess it's like you said, based upon your culture, you have to prioritize what do you need to change first? Is that correct?
Absolutely. If you score low on active shooter prevention and you score low on gang identification, or if you score low on gang involvement and score low on active shooter, and you don't have a lot of gang involvement around your school or in your school, then by all means, you've got to do active shooter. And I would say, if somebody scored a 1 or a 2 on active shooter, they'd all focus on that. That's, kind of been where we're at. What we see the most of is very low scores in sexual misconduct prevention. And really, just to be quick, what really happens, unfortunately, with that is when we ask schools, okay, what are you doing to prevent this? The only thing they usually say is we do background checks. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. It's not effective.
And that goes back to, having open dialogue, knowing your vulnerabilities and, setting up for a prevention. And that's exactly what you can provide, that type of service. So, I'm sorry to kind of skip to this, but Sean, we're happy to have you part of this. Tell us something again. I understand you have a gift for the audience. Would you mind explaining that real quick?
Yeah, by all means. And I'll do it. We'll do two if you like. It doesn't matter to me. I'd rather have this out there. So we have, there are 10 active shooter prevention protocols. There are 8 sexual misconduct prevention protocols. What I'll make the gift of is whoever would like, I would be happy to take at least an hour or more if you need it, to be able to explain exactly what you need to do for each of the protocols, active shooter and sexual misconduct. I'll walk through it step by step and help you kind of get all of the supporting materials that you need to be able to start embedding it within your campus. Because I can promise you the best thing is you can see the improvement because they're all measurable.
Wow, what a very generous gift, and I hope our audience really takes advantage of that. I'm sure this doesn't always happen, so thank you for that. And again, thank you so much to Sean Spellacy of New Dawn Security. If you haven't checked out his website yet, please visit www.newdawnsecurity.com. Again, www.newdawnsecurity.com to learn more about all the great prevention programs he offers. Also, later on today, all attendees will be receiving an email with a link to the offer that Sean just shared. Again, so thank you, Sean Spellacy, for your time and for your commitment to our schools and our children.